accession number 27811, Major Richard Wilson, Reel 16. Now, we were talking about your time in Aden, and you said your wife came out to join you.
It was a first overseas tour.
Now, what was your married accommodation like? Because it was, of course, your first time in it, as opposed to in the mess or barrack rooms.
Well, I was very lucky. When Rachel first arrived, Bill Deller, who was one of the company commanders, was going off on, I think, 3 weeks leave or something. Anyhow, so he lent us his house when she first arrived, giving me time to find somewhere, and I hired a flat, which wasn't very far from the barracks. And we lived there until we left for Libya in early 65.
Now, was it a comfortable sort of flat? Yeah. I mean, you know, that
yes, it was perfectly comfortable. I think it was a two-bedroomed flat with a living room, kitchen. It was all air-conditioned and perfectly adequate for a recently married couple. We had no children at that stage, so it was all very easy. I mean, I think it was quite strange for her because it was really probably about the first time she'd ever been abroad. But there was a very good, sort of all the wives were very good. They all came round and would take her out shopping and she knew Jean Dyer, of course, very well, because when we had quite a big engagement party, which we actually had in their house in Felixstowe, so she knew Jean very well, and had been to functions in Felixstowe, so knew some of the why. So, everybody was very good, and there was a good and taking it down, going down a sphere or two, when a soldier married his wife came out, there was a good sort of family's organization. The quartermaster's department would have had a small piece which would be looking after families, and so no wife would sort of arrive in Aden and then just sort of God, what the hell, where the hell do I go from here? Everywhere we went, there was always an organization I think we had two quartermasters. So the second quartermaster would probably be quartermaster come families officer sort of thing. That was actually very necessary, because when we did eventually go up to the Radfan, the whole battalion went up, just leaving behind the families. And it is very important that they were looked after properly, kept in the picture as to what was going on. They would have had coffee mornings arranged for them and that sort of thing, so they could be briefed on what was going on. And of course, it is very important for the soldiery, or for everybody, for them to know that the families are being looked after and kept in the picture. So that's an important part of battalion life.
What was happening within? Was there much trouble, internal security trouble? And what's this crater you're on about? Because that's not in the Radford, that's within the town.
No, crater was within the town. Crater was an area where if there was going to be a trouble, it was normally down there.
Now, what was the crater?
Well, the crater was just a huge volcanic, non-operative volcano with a city sitting in the bottom of it.
And what kind of problems would arise there?
Well, you could get there were numerous political factions in Aden. Some of them are inter political parties fighting amongst themselves. Some of them, political parties sort of based in the Yemen, but wanting the Brit side of Aden. And every now and then, they'd either fight themselves, between themselves, or else they'd organize themselves to have the sort of, you know, the odd person shot in the back and the rest of it, which would then tie up a lot of soldiers trying to sort it all out. There was a lot of, towards the end, as I actually went out to Aden a second time with the 3rd Battalion, there was a lot of problems with the loyalty of the Federal Army, the loyalty of the police, and in fact, when Mad Mitch got into, had all his problems in Crater, a lot of it was the police. He was having a lot of the problem he was having was with the police, who had not remained loyal. But when one says that, one could well ask, loyal to what? Because by that, you know, even when we were there, there were so many different political factions. The Federal Army was still pretty loyal. And in the Rad family, we fought beside them. But there were a mass of political parties all fighting each other. I'm trying to remember the names of some. FLOSSY was one. Don't ask me what it stands for. And of course, there was all that, you know. There was the outside, coming from Moscow, I suppose. If you actually take the whole chain of command right back, and so there would be unrest, and it might cause, there might be a riot. You'd have to go and sort out. It might be a murder, and then you would dispatch the IS platoon. See what they could sort out. There were quite a lot of static guards and things. I mean, there was Government House to be guarded. There was various the Naffy Beach. I think that I see where the soldiers used to go and bathe. Because there was a hell of a lot of sharks. We had that problem with swimming, and all there it was all netted in, so they had to go to Pacific beaches. And I suspect that we would have had people patrolling while that was going on. On that, we were busy. When you actually sort of asked me, what was it you were doing? One has to think a bit, but we were...
Where were the headquarters set up? In the barracks?
In the barracks, yes.
And what were was there a sort of incident, or a big map, an incident?
Oh, yes, so there was an operations room.
Tell me about the operations room. You'd be in there, I presume.
Well, I'd have an intelligence officer. I had an intelligence officer called John Keep, and he would man that. And that would all, yes, that would be maps with, so that if there was an incident, that whoever the commander or whoever, the platoon commander or the company commander, could go straight and would probably be briefed in the ops room, whether it be large scale maps of Aden Town and Crater and all the rest of it. And, a lot of the trouble we had out there, but I don't think the 1st Battalion was responsible for it. There was a town about 4 miles north of Aden called Sheikh Othman, which you had to go through to get up to Dala. And that was an absolute sort of hub of different political parties and always sort of having a go at somebody. And then, so in the ops room, you'd have the intelligence officer who would know sort of everything about everything in Aden, hopefully. And he'd have an intelligence sergeant and a corporal, probably, etc. My side of life as the adjutant was very, very much more the sort of day-to-day administration of running 700 men. And then if like when we moved up to the Radfan, then
I mean, the day-to-day administration. Were there any specific problems caused by being in Aden rather than in England or somewhere easy? Were there any problems in running the unit day to day?
No, I don't think. I don't think there was any difference. A battalion is all divided up into its companies and all the rest of it, and they're all their own self-supporting groups. And then battalion headquarters lays down every day. You publish battalion Part One orders, and that has in it every sort of administrative thing that's going on in the battalion that day or the next day or whatever it might be. So that has to be got out every night, and that go around everyone. When you try and list these things, you wonder what the hell you did. but in actual fact, there is quite a lot to just to move a company from A to B needs. Like I said, we had an outstation at Macaras. Well, every now and then we'd change those over, and they would go up by raid. Well, a movement order has to be written right down to the sort of smallest details, what weapons they're to take and what food they're to take and all the rest of it, in order to get them from A to B. And although this we're talking about not very long ago, it was actually quite a performance in that in order to move 100 men from A to B, I had to write out a movement order. That was then typed by somebody in the orderly room. Then it was run off on one of those sort of Ronio type things, and then got out to wherever to the company concerned. And which doesn't sound very much, but all sorts of procedures. Whereas today, if I was sitting there, I would have my computer in front of me and my typewriter type bit of my computer in front of me, and I would then just run off my movement order. Every time I made a mistake, I haven't got to cross it out, I just alter it as we can on computers. It must just save hours and hours of time. And some of these things were huge. I mean, when you're moving a battalion from A to B, a movement order is a considerable piece of paper by the time you've finished it. And life must be so much easier today for that.
Now, what about the next thing is the move to the Radfan?
Up to Radfan.
Radfan, yes, sorry.
Yes, well, the Radfan operations had started. Aden Brigade, I think, started the Radfan operations. And we weren't the first troops to go up. To get up there...
Now, what were the operations designed to achieve? First,
the Radfan was designed. The Radfan was a vast area. What I imagine is very like the northwest frontier of India, deep ravines, very sort of high hills, all the rest of it. An area in which a very small amount of dissidents can control and cause a lot of troops a lot of trouble. What were the distance trying to do? Well, they used to ambush the convoys and things going up to Dala and take off. I mean, a lot of them were civilian convoys going up, and they'd ambush them and take food and whatever was being carried up to these upcountry towns. And there were a load of distance who had sort of control of this vast area, and it was decided that enough was enough, and we would mount an operation to get rid of these distance from it. So they set up a headquarters at a place called Thumier, Thumier, which was big enough to make an airstrip to get planes as large as Beverley's in, which made life a lot easier because Thumier, I think, was about 40 or 50 miles north of Aden. So it saved you having to do the road part. I mean, when I talk about road, they weren't roads. They were just sand tracks up there. So around the airstrip was made a sort of base camp, and this was a sort of a forward base area to run the Radfan operations from. And then basically from there, we had to shove the distance out and hold the ground. And again, I think this is probably very like Northwest Frontier. You took the high ground because that's where they were. And then you could push the rest of your people up the ravines and things once you'd taken the high ground. Because otherwise, if you went up the ravine without doing that, then you would get ambushed. And of course, compared to the Northwest Frontier, I mean, we had helicopters, which were a great help at lifting people up to the heights. And so over a period of months, that's the sort of thing that we did until eventually 38 Brigade, I think it was, sort of came in and took over from Aden Brigade.
Now, did you mainly stay at Thumier then?
I did. When the battalion went up, I mainly stayed at Thumier, yes. I had very little administration to do once we got up there because my assistant adjutant or somebody would be back in Waterloo Lines doing that, a lot of my time would be manning the wireless sets. So that if we had two or three companies out, the CO would want to know, obviously, all the time, you know, where they were, what they were doing. So we'd have a sort of forward operations room, which would be run by myself and the intelligence officer. And, you know, when I was off sleeping, he would be on and vice versa.
And what would the forward operations room do? I mean, that's in Thumier, but, I mean, it is forward.
Well, it's probably a tent. I mean, you know, one. But it would have them. It would have all the Radfan maps in it. It would have where every company was, etc. So that the CO could, you know, push them around as he wanted, and then if there was a problem. I mean, a lot of our problem was that even when we got the heights, we would push the vehicles and things up the ravines, but of course often they'd mine them. And we did have several incidents of vehicles being blown up on mines. The CO would, on the whole, I mean, obviously he would go forward every now and then to see his troops. Otherwise, he'd be accused, like a lot of the First World War generals were, of not going forward to see what was going on. But there are occasions when commanding officers can be too brave and are too far forward, and often they're not in a position to be back and make the right decisions. So a lot of the time Jack would be back, and then if there was an incident, he was in a position to make a proper and sensible decision as to what happened there, and to get chopper evacuation or whatever was required. But then, obviously, once they'd probably got into a set place and set up a platoon base or company base or whatever it is, then at some stage he would obviously go forward to see them and make sure they'd got, you know, they were all right and they got everything that they wanted. And here again, I think probably warfare today, although we had quite good wireless communications by 64, I'm sure they're a million times better today. Because if probably every soldier's got a mobile phone in his pocket. I haven't soldiered for a long time, so I don't know. But I would have thought the communication side of life is very much easier today than it was then. And being very deep ravines and things, often you couldn't. Wirelesses in those days didn't work off a satellite communication. It worked on a sort of line to line. So often you know, if you're in a very deep ravine, your wirelesses probably weren't working very well. So that's sort of how the operations.
Was Thumia ever attacked?
Yes. It wasn't. Thumia was never what you would call militarily attacked, as far as I know. No, sure it wasn't. It was sniped at, yes. And so your tents would have a sort of sandbag wall with a tent on the top, if you're with me. But yes, it was sniped at on occasions, and especially at sort of dusk, because they knew you could, if they sniped at you at dusk, there was very little you could really do about it, because by the time you got out there to sort of see what they'd either gone, or else anyhow it was too dark to move about. So we did get often. And I think the people who lived in Dala, and I did go up to Dala once.
That was further into
that's
the
further. That was right. That was one of the sort of permanent Federal Army bases.
Well, tell me about your visit there. They were there then, the Federal Army.
Federal Army. We must have had a platoon or something up there for me to go up there, because I wouldn't have gone up to see the Federal Army. We must have had a platoon, or could even have been a. I have a feeling Bill Deller's company could have been up there at that time. Dala is just a what I call a mud town. You see these pictures of these sort of Yemeni type cities. They're all mud brick towns. Normally on a sort of built round a height, a hill, rest of it. And there was this sort of military cantonment sort of on one edge, I suppose it was.
And would you be helicoptered up there?
No, I went up by road.
With an escort?
I'd go up with one of the routine convoys. When any military went up to Dara, it was a military convoy. Probably had, because we had one cavalry regiment in Aden all the time. I think it was the Queen's Green Guards when we were there. So it would go up with an armoured car escort. So there would be an armoured car in front, two or three lorries or whatever it is, whatever was being taken up there, and an armoured car behind, with the usual sort of way of getting up to, and Macaris would be in exactly the same.
And what was the situation when you got to Dala? How did you find the company?
They were in a tented camp. What was their task? It was a fortified town, really, and much the same as the Radfan. If there was a problem sort of up on the Yemeni border or whatever it might be, they could be turned out to go up and sort it out.
Now, Dai's the operations were quite successful, I believe, by the regiment in
Radfan.
Was it perceived so at the time?
Yes, I think so. I mean, there was one very high height mountain, or whatever you like to call it, called the Jebel Hara.
I know you spell that.
Jebel and H-U-R-I-A-H, something like that. And this was was sort of the highest point, I suppose, in the Radfan. And it overlooked Aden. I mean, Aden was about 60 miles away, but at night from the Jebel, you could see the lights of Aden. No problem. And this was held, or thought to be held, by the dissidents. And when you got up onto this, it was, I suppose, rather like Table Mountain. It was sort of flat at the top, but it was a sort of situation where half a dozen dissidents could hold up two companies of men, because there were very few ways of getting up onto this thing, and so eventually the battalion was given the task of taking the Jebel. One night, but the lead companies got up onto the Jebel. I think they were fired at once or twice, but certainly when they got up there was nobody there. This is the way the distance operated. And I went up the following. I didn't go up the following morning, and I'm afraid I went up in a chopper, which was much the easiest way of getting up there. But this was the sort of high point of the battalions.
And was that position retained?
Yes, we stayed there quite some time. And in fact, we still have an officer's Jebel Hara dinner, where it was every 5 years. Then it came down to every 2 years. And Jack Dai, now being 86, I think he is, it's come down to a year. So we now have it every year.